Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel speeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
I think that always makes me nervous when the producer comes in and goes, "We're rolling. We're rolling." I go, "Oh, okay. Did he hear any of the shit I said just before he said we were rolling?" This is another episode of The Suspendables. Hi again, everybody. Coming at you from my kitchen table in Edmonton, Alberta. Me and Russ Cortinel do this each and every week. Wait a minute. No, we don't. Russ is not doing it this week. Okay. So it's this might only be his first miss in a long time. I think it's only been twice over all the years we've been, over all the months and years we've been doing it. But Rusty's got the big wedding. Okay, his daughter's getting married, Allie Cortinel, who's marrying Minnesota Vikings superstar Eric Kendricks. $50 million. His last contract he signed for $50 million. If you follow Allie Cortinel, check her out on Instagram. She's letting everyone inside her life about the wedding that's coming up this week. I think it's in Napa Valley in California. Let me put it this way. I just text Russ. I said, if the tradition is still alive that the father of the bride has to pay for the wedding, I don't know, Stevie, 1.5 mil, maybe. This thing is off the charts, man.
Well, how about getting the NFL star to pay for it? Like, Russ did well in his career earnings in the NHL, but was the number you just said 30, 50 million that Kendricks has made?
Yeah, he might be spending half of it. I don't know, man. It's a big wedding. So congratulations to Russ and his daughter, Allie Cortinel, who's getting married this week. So check her out. Yeah, she's letting everyone inside the old wedding day. We got a guest. I love when we have a guest. I love this guy. We go back to my Ottawa days in radio when I started in the late 90s when I started doing this. And I love schmoozing, you know. I love being around the players. I was an excellent hockey player. I was very good. But I got overlooked. Okay, I got overlooked. And I almost made it. I almost made it to the show. But I just got cut short when I was 11 years old. Otherwise, I had it going on. I would have whistled my way into the NHL. But I love the guys. I love the NHL players. But this guy particularly is one of these guys. Okay, Stevie, like you want to get close to an NHL player, right? And they're gonna kind of flick you. Okay, they're gonna kind of a lot of them are gonna flick you. It's like, you know, no, I got bigger shit to do. I got better things. But Jason York, we became friends back in that day, and he always kind of, if there's other people around, we're sort of pulling at these players to go, let's go for dinner, let's do all that. He's like, No, I'm going to hang with Jungle, man. I'm going to go do some. A super humble guy, and happy to call him a friend. And he joins us today on the show. Yorkie, how are you, man?
Jimmy, I'm great. You're starting to sound like the Rain Man there talking about hockey. You're like, I'm an excellent hockey player. Like, come on. I go way back with you. I go way back with my good friend, Steve Warren. Pleasant surprise. I had no idea Steve was going to be on today. So that's awesome. But Jimmy, we had some good times back in the day. And don't kid yourself, you were very good with your time. We did a bunch of charity golf tournaments. You would come, you'd be the auctioneer, you were the life of the party. Back when you could do, you know, you could be a little more free in what you were doing.
Yes.
you were tremendous, and you raised, big reason why we raised so much money for the Ottawa Boys and Girls Club. Always generous with your time, man, but good to see you.
Thanks for the kind words, Yorkie. We were talking, setting up this interview yesterday, and you said, well, what goes on the show? What can I do? I said, anything, man. Anything goes on this show. And then those were my blurry days, Yorkie, as I like to call them. Okay. I might have been a little drunk, a little high, you know, but that's how I got through the day back in those days. And then he went, so I forget a lot of the shit I did, Yorkie, back in those days. I had fun. And you said, can we talk about when you threw a jersey over two or three girls at the same time? Yorkie, I forget. Well, was that your tournament at Eagle Creek?
Back when we used to have golf tournaments, we would auction off jerseys. And this one tournament, I had a great collection of jerseys. This was back when the Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup. And it was Patrick Waugh's jersey. And it was the good jersey, too. You know the ones you get with the fighting strap, the official ones?
Yeah, one
of those. And this jersey or sweater, whatever you want to call it, it had the entire Avalanche's team's names on there. Ray Bourque, Joe Sakic, Forsberg, Waugh. They had everybody on this. And usually a jersey like that, couple thousand bucks.
Yeah, right.
You ended up getting $3,400 for this jersey. And you might have been a little inventive in how you went about auctioning off. We had two volunteers. You put the jersey over both of them. They did a nice job modeling it. And yes. Maybe part of the reason got a little extra money as well. But you were an innovator. That was part of your beauty as an auctioneer. You did what you had to do to get the top dollar.
It's commitment, Yorkie. It's commitment. Yep. Okay. It's passion, absolutely. Commitment, you know, dedication all the way. Let's go backwards, Yorkie, in your life. You finished, I don't know, nice career there, by the way. Okay. I went Wikipedia on you. Okay. That's how close we are, Yorkie. Okay. That's how close you and I are. I better pull up Wiki. 91 to 207. That's pretty deep. That's 16, 17 year career. I want to talk to you about that, but what are you doing these days, Jason? You're a Nepean born guy. You're still in Ottawa. You still live there out in Canada. So fill us up with your life and what you've been doing.
Yeah. Well, since I retired, my last year, like you said, was 2007. We could talk some more about that later. I had a real interesting career. But as soon as I retired, I had a couple opportunities. One, I was going to go play in Russia for a year. Got offered quite a bit of money, as guys did back then, to go over and play in Russia.
Right.
Decided to take a pass on that. I was just too beat up. I was too tired. Wanted to come home. And initially just started coaching my kids, started doing radio a couple years later. And then fast forward to today, still coaching. Actually bought a junior A hockey team here in Ottawa, the Kentville 73s. For those that aren't familiar, it would be like similar to the BCHL, the Alberta Junior League. We got the CCHL here in Ottawa with the Pembroke Lumber Kings, Brockville Braves, Nepean Raiders. Steve knows all about that league. So I bought the team, coached the team for the last 5 years, had a blast doing it. Actually in the process now of getting out, going to sell the team. Well, it actually is sold. So I'll be moving on from that and still doing some television for Sportsnet part-time. And this year, probably a little more Sportsnet. That's about it. You know, my kids are, this will be the first year my youngest is going to be out of the house. So Laurel and my wife and I, we're done. We're done, Jimmy. The boys are done. I'll have my one son's at Western. My other son's going to Elmira College, and my daughter, who went to St. of X University, she graduated. She's on her own. So empty nesters, man. It's going to be fun this year.
Jason, tell me this. When you talk about the Kentville 73s, all my friends are rich, the guys I know, okay, are loaded. One of my friends was looking at buying an NHL franchise one year. He was looking at buying the Pittsburgh Penguins. Years ago, before Mario took it over when it got up for grabs. I guess that's probably about the right time frame. And he had a million resources, you know, to look at it. He wasn't doing it like some of the rich guys do, as almost like a hobby. You know, it's like, okay, let's buy a team and see how, you know what I mean? And so he really looked into it, and he came away from it saying, you can't, back in the day, you can't make money on an NHL team, you know, the, and we figured out since then, the only reason guys buy NHL teams is because the franchise, the value of them just keeps going up and up and up every year. Right. So they kind of hang in there. Teams are now worth, I don't know, a billion. You know, the Sens the other day was something like $700 to $800 million. They think they're worth, but he did say that minor hockey teams are and junior teams are a good way to make money. You talk about the Kempfville 73s that you're into. Did you make money on that Yorkie, or was it just sort of you stepped up because you wanted to be a community guy and keep the team going? Talk about that, how you said and came to the decision that you're going to buy a team.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the reasons I bought the team, actually from a guy you know, and a guy Steve knows, Ron Tugnut.
Oh, sure.
Tugger owned the team. He had a couple kids that played on the team, and I had a son that was playing for the team for Tugger. And he had a scholarship to go to University of Maine, and he had to go back and play for Kempfville the next year. And Tugger came to me, he's like, "You want to buy the team?" And I said, "No, I'm not really interested. My son's good here." And he goes, "Well, I've got some other guys that want to buy it, and they want to buy it for different reasons. They want to put all their five kids on the team and blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, and Tugger kind of said, it might turn into a little bit of a shit show. So I was like, and then I had a buddy of mine who wanted to buy a team for a long time. And he was always kind of in my ear, let's buy a team. I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that guy that has a kid on the team. So I guess twofold, I got Tugger coming to me. I've got the threat of some people buying this team. And now my kids who's going to school is going to be in not a great environment. I got my buddy who's always tapped me on the shoulder. So finally I came and I said, all right, I'll buy it. And me and my couple buddies bought it. It turned out to be a great move though, guys. I had a lot of fun. It was fun doing it. And to your point, it is nice to have some impact on young guys' lives. Because players that play on these teams, they're all trying to get scholarships. They're all trying to move to the next level. So for me, having a little bit of skin in the game, being able to help some kids, at the same time, my kid gets to play there and be in an environment, at least I'll say it's a good environment. I'm biased. Right. But yeah, so that's why I bought it, Jimmy. Can you make money? Yeah, you can make money. Depends mm-hmm. how much work you want to put into it. At those levels, teams cost, I think now they're around $700,000-$800,000 to buy these teams.
Oh wow,
a lot of money. But it's the guys that run these teams. You run camps in the summer. You do skill development. The kids in this league now have to pay as well, so it kind of covers your cost base. Back in the day, like 20 years ago, you could not own one of these teams, and you would go broke running these teams. You couldn't do it. It wasn't feasible. But now you can make a little. You're not getting rich off these teams. If you really hammer it and you put your foot down and you're running a hockey school, you're running five camps, and you're doing that, yeah, you could make some money. But at the most, you're going to make 100, 150 grand, which is still great. Right. Still great, but you're not getting rich off it.
Right. You're not doing it for the dough. What are the crowds like? What are the crowds like for those that league and your team?
Depends where you play. So the city teams, you're familiar with Ottawa. For anyone that's familiar with in Ottawa, if you're a city team like the PM, like Ottawa, you're not going to get great crowds. But if you're out in the country, like a Kempville, a Brockville, a Pembroke, Hawkesbury, you're going to get good crowds because you're just far enough outside of the city where it's, instead of going to a Sens game, maybe it's a 40-minute drive plus probably $500.
Right.
You can go to a junior game for $12, have a little bit of fun.
Right.
And in the playoffs, we got some good crowds. We're getting like 700 people, which is a lot for that level. And it's good. It's a nice little buzz. It's when you're out in the country, like I said, it's cool for the kids because they're kind of the big dogs in town, and makes them think like they're doing something real worthwhile, which it is.
Is it different now, Yorkie, with junior players, with kids coming up, with the way hockey's taught, the size of the kid has changed so much, like physically, I mean, right? Kids are kind of more self-entitled now than when we were young, Yorkie, right? You, like, you never questioned authority and shit like that. you've been a coach. You grew up as a, you know, as a hockey player. Talk about coaching those kids now. Is it different than when you were their age, Yorkie? Trying to keep these kids on the beam.
Yeah, listen, everybody will always say, well, back in my day, I did this. I walked through all this snow, and kids, they don't get it. The kids today, they just ask, they want to know why. Why am I doing this? How come? They're not it's not that they don't like authoritative positions above them. It's not like they're bad kids. They're just different, and they're still good. And the big difference, I would say, is kids are a lot more sensitive. And as a coach, you gotta find a different way to get through kids now, because yelling, screaming, the day of the coach that's trying to intimidate kids or players to play doesn't work. You gotta make them feel like you are in it with them. And if you can do that, these kids will do anything for you. They'll go through a wall for you, especially the guys I had. As long as you just, when you're picking your kids, I always say, if I've got two kids that are of equal talent, I'm not taking the kid that's bigger or faster. I'm taking the kid that I think has better character. And if you do that in hockey, you'll always get through to these guys. Character trumps everything. And it's, for me, I really enjoy it. I'm going to miss it because I'm not going to coach this year. Mm-hmm. But they're different, Jimmy. It's not that you got to massage. You just got to really watch what you say now, because kids today, if you tell them one negative thing and 10 positive things, they'll only remember the negative thing. So you really got to kind of calculate how you talk to kids and make sure it's real positive.
You sound like, Yorkie, you sound like a perfect resume for a guy to be an NHL coach. you do, man, right? It's, When you retired, one of your teammates and your friends, I think you played with them, on the week of Hall of Fame inductions, I was talking to Stevie yesterday saying, Luke Richardson, although may not ever get in the Hall of Fame, but this guy gets tapped on the shoulder to become a head coach in the NHL. What a coup, man, for that guy, right? And it really must be, Yorkie, when, this guy dedicated his life to hockey, post career he did, has earned his stripes, and then gets named a head coach in the NHL. It must be awesome for the guy.
Yeah, I sent Luke a note. Sent him a note yesterday. He got back to me in like 2 minutes right away. He's just, Jimmy, he's just such a humble guy. And Steve knows him as well from being here in Ottawa. For Luke is, he goes to the same gym as my wife goes to, and he does the classes. This guy does everything 100%, whether it's doing a fitness class, whether it's coaching in the NHL, it's no different. He's just such a hard worker, and he is a player's coach. Just talking to guys that played for him when he was in Binghamton, back when he was coaching the Senators team,
right,
the Senators AHL team, he has a way to getting through players. Remember that run Montreal went on? Their head coach got COVID. He wasn't able to coach. Luke took that bench over. And man, he went on a run with Montreal, and this is well deserved. Him getting the shot finally here in Chicago to be a head coach.
Right.
I think Chicago, I've already got them booked for a team that's going to make the playoffs. Luke just gets the best out of players. He gets it. He understands it. Like you said, Jim, he's paid his dues. He's put the work in. If you want to be a coach after you're done playing, you got to get after it right away. The thing with me, I had an opportunity to stay in Boston and go down to Providence and coach the D. I decided to spend some time with my family, going a little bit of a different route. Mm-hmm. Luke went the other route. He got right into player development, helping out the Sens, and then he's been good at it. And those are the types of people you want coaching, guys that have the respect of the room, and they know how to get through to today's player. They know how to speak their language. And Luke, here's a funny story about him. Steve might know this one. Back when Binghamton used to practice, and here's how you get the respect of your players. Luke throws the gear on. He's been retired for about 4 or 5 years. And he goes, we're going to have a hard practice today, fellas. He put his gear on, did all the skating, all the battling. So you're doing a 3-on-3 down low. forwards are going up against their coach, and he's playing hard on them and just showing like what it takes to play. And like, how many guys are going to do that on as a coach? Throw the gear on and compete with your players in practice. You do stuff like that, you just get instant respect from your players.
Right. When you were thinking about retiring, Jason, you know, when I look at your career, you had everything with, you know, getting drafted. You played for four or five teams, right? When you did, that's kind of average, right? With the, you know, most guys, you had injury, probably more than most. I think you had tragedy. I think your father died while you were playing. You got moved around. You went to the minors. You went overseas to play. When you looked at retiring, Jason, was it, I just can't play anymore? Or, you know, were you thinking about staying in hockey? You'd mentioned about Boston. Talk to me about the process of an NHL player when they're faced with this. You know, it can't be fun. It can't be fun when you're looking at saying, I got to think about hanging it up. Why did you retire at the time you retired?
Jimmy, I'm going to start calling you Jack Handy. I feel like I'm on the Saturday Night Live Deep Thoughts here.
Nice.
We're going deep here. We're going deep.
Yeah, we're going deep. Man.
Okay. Jack Handy. Remember that one?
I love that guy. That's so good. Saturday Night Live was funny back in those days.
It was so good.
Deep Thoughts. Okay. Yeah, Deep Thoughts.
With Jim Handy.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's when there comes a point in someone's career. It doesn't matter what it is, when you just know you're done. And my point came, well, number one, I was playing my last year in Boston. Dave Lewis was the coach. And Dave Louis is a great guy. Great man. He basically came to me because I hurt my knee three times that year. Had a couple surgeries. Louis comes to me. He's like, Yerky, you don't have to play anymore if you don't want to. We weren't making the playoffs. It wasn't very fast anymore. And basically that year, though, when I started that year, I was nervous coming in because I'd been in Switzerland the year before, played in Lugano. And the only reason I got back to the NHL was Dave Lewis came over and he coached the Spengler Cup, that tournament up in Davos.
Yep.
And so I'm up there and it's different hockey. You don't get hit in Swiss hockey. It's soft. And I look pretty good because I'm a decent skater. I'm moving around. So Louis gets the job in Boston. Peter Shirelli is the GM. They bring me in as an older guy. It was Chara's first year there as the captain. Mark Savard was there. Phil Kessel was a rookie. We ended up having an awful year. I get hurt. Louis comes to me, he says, I'm not playing anymore. So for the rest of the year, I hung out with the team, but when it was game time or practice time, I was always hanging out with the coaches. Like Doug Huda was the D coach. I'd basically just hang out with Doug. And then I started gravitating and I'm like, you know what? I might become a coach. And then they throw me a bone. Last game of the regular season is against the Ottawa Senators. And they decide to draft me. And I'm like, holy shit, like I gotta play again.
Sure.
And the only thing going through my head, I hope I don't blow my knee out again in this game and wreck my knees so I can't skate with my kids anymore, who at the time were 4 and 3. So when you're going into a professional hockey game and your biggest concern is not getting hurt. you know you're done. And I knew I was done. Had an opportunity, like I said earlier, to go play in Europe. But I was so beat up, Jimmy, at the end of it. I had, you name it, I had it. Just too many injuries. And then family starts to become important. Well, it is important. But when you're playing, you guys won't admit this, but you're a selfish asshole when you're playing in the NHL. You think about yourself and... Mm-hmm. That's the way it is because you got to be, your body pays the bills and your body is what's getting it done. So that's what you think about all the time. And then all of a sudden you start losing your body and you say, man, I gotta get my act together here and start thinking about post hockey.
Right. When Rusty's not available, which is very seldom, like I said, and actually sometimes he's done the show and it appears he's unavailable. Okay. When he does. So Stevie produces the show and I do a show with Stevie called the SW P. We do it every week. We do it every day, actually. And so I get Stevie to weigh in. He's here today. What an intro, Stevie. Look at me go.
That was something. That was something. I like how you bring me off the air. You're like, Russ isn't going to be out because I need you to jump in today. So I guess by that you meant I'll ask 19 questions and then sort of bring you in at that stage of the game. But it's great to be here. It really is nice.
Yeah. I can cut you off right now if you want.
No, okay? You actually can't. I'm the producer too. So anyway.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay. This better be a good question.
Yeah, I think it is. Obviously, Yorkie, you mentioned a bunch of the great players you played with. And I think that near the top of that list has to be the guy that you played with for 5 years in Ottawa, Daniel Alfredsson. Such a special week for that guy. He's been up for the Hockey Hall of Fame since 2017. And on Monday of this week, he got the call. What were your impressions of Daniel Alfredsson finally getting in?
Just so happy, Steve. Like, you know Alfie. Anybody that's come across Alfie, number one, and Jimmy said that about me earlier, and thanks for saying that, Jimmy. Alfie is a guy where he never big times anybody. He's always got time for whoever it is. A couple of buddies of mine were playing golf yesterday and telling Alfredsson stories. And they went down to a game in Boston, I don't know, back when Alfie was playing. And after the game, they're sitting in the Fours bar. You know that old famous bar downtown? It's called the Fours. And Alfie walks in. Teammates were with him, and then they said hi to him. We're from Ottawa. Alfie didn't know who these two guys were, just knew they were Ottawa guys, made the trip, went over, had a beer, spent an hour with these guys, just shooting the breeze, talking. All the rest of the centers were coming by. We're going somewhere else. Alfie goes, yeah, guys, I'll catch up with you guys in a bit. Just going to talk to these guys for a while. How many star players would sit there and talk to two total strangers for an hour because they were from Ottawa? Like that's pretty cool, right? Yeah. And now these two guys have a story about it. Well, that's just Daniel Alfredsson. And I think this nomination, obviously, Steve, you look at the numbers, you look at the that run Ottawa had, the Calder Trophy. What is he, a 5-6-time All-Star? The numbers are great, but I just think when you look at players, if you think of the Ottawa Senators, you think of the face of the franchise. It's Daniel Alfredsson. And since this team came into the league, you had the early years of Yashin, but it's always been Alfie's team. And the team really took a turn when Alfie became the captain. He's synonymous with the Ottawa Senators brand. So when you think about that, he's got to get into the Hall of Fame. If you're going to put somebody in from the Ottawa Senators, it's a no-brainer. It's Daniel Alfredsson, and it's well-deserved. So for me, I sent him a note yesterday, same thing, got back to me in 2 minutes. He's a wonderful guy, great family guy. He was talking about mental health long before it was cool to talk about mental health. He was talking about it when people were afraid to talk about mental health. You remember that? That was a big step he took, and he opened a lot of doors, broke down a lot of barriers. So for me, the hockey, unbelievable player, but I love the total package of Alfie. It's what he does off the ice, how he treats people. Just a good overall human being to go along with a great player.
Yeah. Colorado wins the Stanley Cup. You said they were the better team. Rusty said, I don't even think Colorado can beat Tampa. Give us your take on it. One of the, you talk about awards, Alfie getting into the Hall of Fame, year long career. You played your heart out. Tough to, it's so hard to win. I'm obviously not the barometer for that. You are to get through, to make the playoffs, to win a round, to win two rounds, to get to the fucking Stanley Cup in the conference. This Makar kid, I don't know how old he is, 23. This kid walks away with about, I don't know, 1,000 pounds of trophies when he did that. For me, that was kind of the highlight of that. Gretz called this kid, the next Bobby Orr. What's your whole take on the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, no, well, you kind of hit the nail on the head there, Jimmy, with Makar. And the thing, and I love Bobby Orr. Like, I got a bunch of Bobby Orr.
I see that.
Memorabilia. I got his skate back here. I got the signed picture. I actually got a chance to meet Bobby. You remember this, Steve? Remember, he used to do a tournament up in Smith Falls. And I went to play in it 1 year. I know I'm changing gears here, talking about Bobby Orr. But I tell you what, and this was early in my career, and I do like, I hope I'm a guy that, not that I'm a famous person, I'm just a guy that played pro hockey. But every time you meet somebody, I can't stand when I see people that big time people or don't give people the time of day. I watched Bobby Orr at this tournament, man. He shook everyone's hand, had time for everybody. And I walked away from them like, Bobby Orr just stood there for 5 hours and made everybody feel like $1 million. Like it was just, it was such a cool thing to see. But the thing with Makar, and this is what I started before I rambled on about Bobby Orr. He's doing this in an era when everyone, like you watch those Bobby Orr videos and no disrespect, like he's a legend.
Right.
A lot of guys on the ice didn't have good edge work, weren't good skaters. Everybody can skate now. And Makar is making these guys look like they can't skate. Like that's what's incredible to me. His skating is so good, Jimmy. And also defensively. He was going step for step with Connor McDavid defensively. Like how many defensemen can do that? Like you saw we did the Morgan Riley a couple of years ago, made him look silly with that highlight where he did the no looker stop go the other way. Makar's the real deal. He's a total package. I just hope he doesn't get hurt because once you get a big knee injury and you lose what your advantage is, it's tough. But he's so exciting. He's great to watch. That team, they were just so much faster than Tampa. And you saw the injury report today, guys. Everybody on Tampa was beat up. Like you had Point had that a torn quad. Kucherov had a whatever he had. They were beat up. You can't go 3 years in a row that deep because you never recover. It's just the seasons are too long now. Guys never take nights off during the season. I'm surprised Tampa got to there. But at the end, Colorado was the better team. They deserved it.
Kind of cool when you're trying to pick a team, you know, who you want when it's not your favorite team. You know, I'm an Oilers Sens guy. Stevie's a Sens guy through and through. I'm a Leaf guy. Easy, everyone. Easy now. But then you get these two teams, and I'm going, who do I want to win here? You know, I know Pat Maroon went from his days here. That story is incredible that guy's nipped off three cups already. It was a possible four for him. And then when I heard this stat that nobody on the Colorado Avalanche have ever won a Stanley Cup, with the exception of those two guys, the injured guy and Helm, I thought, oh, I got to see this team win. I love the championship run. I love the win. I love the stories from these guys and the, you know, the post Stanley Cup champion interviews and all that stuff in the on ice.
Well, Jimmy, isn't this when you flourished back when you were hanging around the Oilers back as soon as the hockey was one thing, but as soon as the cup was win, that's when you showed up for all the parties.
Absolutely. Listen, pal, I took a lot of rebounds after those games. I picked up every single one of them, Yorkie. Okay. I took it right on the stick. Okay. What a cool thing, Yorkie, for a bunch of those guys. And I know you didn't get to experience that. But the day you got like the biggest days in your life, Yorkie, as a hockey player, I don't want to put words in your mouth. But when you go back over your career, which was long and great, what was the first biggest memory and proudest moment as a hockey player growing up? That first time when you're going, oh my God, I never thought this would happen. And it did. I was it your junior days? Was it your midget days? Was it, you know?
Yeah, good question. Okay. So probably I never thought, here's the thing, when it's probably guys from my generation, you just, when you're young, you just kind of play. You go out and you play road hockey, you go to the outdoor rink, you play on the outdoor rink. I was never one of the best guys in my life. I was like maybe the fifth best guy. Well, I was good. We had a pretty good team. I had one guy on my team that was, I thought he was the best player in Canada. The only guy named Derek Switzer ended up playing for North Bay, was the captain, but he was 5'7". So back then, if you're 5'7", nobody was even looking at you. So he played, played junior and then went to play in Germany. But when I got drafted, I had a guy show up at my front door scout from the Sudbury Wolves, unbeknownst. We had no idea what's coming over. Knocks on the door. Hi, I'm so-and-so from the Sudbury Wolves. We're going to draft you in the second round with our first pick. They had the first pick overall. And I'm like, oh, that's great. But I'm going to school. I'm getting a scholarship. My brother went to Princeton. And that's what I want to do. So we talked to this scout. And then my parents said to me, you know, your marks really aren't that high, you know. So you might want to consider going to the OHL. And I said, okay, well, so we go to the draft. We go sit at the draft here. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking I'm getting picked by Sudbury. I get picked by Hamilton in the first round, 13th overall. Well, I guess I'm going Hamilton now. But I didn't have an agent. I didn't have. I had never watched an Ottawa 67s game in my life. I just played hockey. Went to go watch my older brothers play when they played for the PN Raiders, and you didn't think about stuff. You just kind of did your thing, whether it was baseball, hockey, or whatever. So that's number one. And then after that, I just started to play better when I was in the OHL. I just got better and better. Although I did have a horrible experience my first year junior. Played for an absolute psychopath by the name of Bill LaForge. And
I know Bill. Now,
Bill's passed away now. But back then, it was you talk about culture changes from late 80s to now.
Right.
The stuff that was going on junior hockey back then, guys would be in jail for what they were doing, for what they were letting going on. So anyhow, that year was awful. Ended up going to play in Windsor the next year for this was a pretty cool story.
Right.
Paul Maurice was 21 years old. And he had just finished playing in Windsor the year before. I'd actually played against him. He became the D coach in Windsor. He was 2 years or 3 years older than me, and he was my D coach. So Paul and I kind of connected, and I went from being a guy that was ready to quit hockey because of my experience in Hamilton to loving the game. I ended up getting 13 points my first year junior to 63. My second year in Windsor. And Paul Maurice, I'll tell this to anybody that ever asked me about who changed my life, Paul Maurice. He just, you know, these guys, they're kind of like talent whisperers. They're able to kind of bring things out in people.
Yeah.
Well, Paul was able to do that with me. And I just started having fun and playing hockey that I never really thought I'd be playing. And it just got better. And then after that, went to Kitchener, went to Memorial Cup, lost in the finals, and then went to the minors. Every level I went to, Jimmy, it was like, you got to prove yourself, another stepping stone.
Yes.
Spent like 3.5 years in the minors before I made it. So nothing really came easy for me,
right?
But it makes it all the sweeter when things kind of work out for you.
What about draft day? There, you go 7th round, 1990, 129th, I think, overall.
Draft day is hell. It's hell, man. I went, so that gong show of a year I had in Hamilton, somehow I was rated 30th overall in the draft, like 30th overall.
Wow.
So I get this agent, Bill LaForge says to me, he goes, well, you got to have an agent. Here, Rick Kern's going to be your agent. So Rick Kern becomes my agent. I go down to the draft. I'm sitting in the Montreal Forum, got my little suit on, waiting to get called. Never get drafted. Sat through the draft, never got picked. Went back home and then got traded to Windsor and then got overpassed again. And finally, in year three, same thing. I say, I'm not going to the draft. My agent's like, I got a new agent at the time. It's Pat Morris. He's like, you're coming to the draft. You're getting picked in the third or the fourth round. So I'm like, all right, I'll come. So I ended up going out to Vancouver. Third round comes, fourth round comes, fifth round comes. So after the sixth round, they take a break. They take the draft board down. And I said, I'm out of here. I'm leaving. I'm going home. I'm done with hockey. I'm not doing this again. So Detroit gets the first pick when they were back from their hour recess. And I get picked. This is my claim to fame. I am the first pick on the second draft board they put up after the break. And then my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, we ended up going out to see her uncle on Salt Spring Island. And this place, I don't know if you ever heard of
Beautiful.
Salt Spring
Island. Oh, yeah. I'm out west, right? I know all about it. Yeah.
It's all hippies on there.
Yeah.
We go spend a week. It was supposed to be a weekend with her uncle. This guy plays golf in black jeans, black cowboy boots, and he walks the course. He walks. So we play golf there. Only spent a couple of days in Salt Spring, then came back after the draft. Ended up getting shingles. I was so stressed out.
Oh no!
But the draft. You see all these great stories. People are happy. First rounders. Blah blah blah. It's unless you know you're going in the first round, do not go. Do not go. It's not fun.
Yeah, I can't even imagine that happening today. So you're 30th ranked going into your draft. Like every 30th ranked guy will get drafted now in 2022. So you're 30th ranked in the draft. You don't even get drafted. You go back the following year. You don't get drafted again. And then finally in the third year, is that right, that you got drafted?
Well, so back then, Steve, if you were first year eligibility, there was a rule. You had to go in the first three rounds. So you had to go first three rounds. But they told me to go. So you go. And then the other thing too, my junior coach, before the draft, I actually said I was traded after. I got traded before the NHL draft. So I was told, and who knows if it's true, I was told the Bill LaForge went around to all NHL teams and told them I had some issues, that I was into drugs and this and that. And there was a lot of stuff said. So I don't know if it was true. I don't know if it had anything to do with it. But it came out after. And then anyhow, Windsor got me. It was Tom Webster was the coach, Paul Maurice. And they're like, man, we were told all these things about you. And none of them are true. And we're just happy to have you. So anyhow, it was that first year junior, man, I would not wish what happened to me on anybody. Like, you hear stories about people now that I had this happen to me and that. I could trump anybody.
Can you elaborate on that, Yorkie? Or you choose not to?
It's just, you know, you hear all the stories today about hazing and what used to go on back in the past. It's just, for me, just, these are memories you just kind of want to just not think about, but it's just, that's part of the reason I got into coaching too, is when you're coaching young guys and young kids, you want to kind of make the experience as best possible as you can for these kids. And my first year junior was absolute hell, but after that, playing for Paul Maurice, for Tom Webster, Motor City, Brad Smith, and the Windsor, another great guy. There are far more, I'm using good English here, there's far more better people in hockey than the odd bad apples. And back then, junior hockey was just a different culture too. All right. Junior teams were doing it. The hazing, the treatment of players and the stuff that used to go on, that doesn't happen anymore. And it used to happen big time in the 80s. It was just, it's a part of junior hockey that was unfortunate, but part of the reason I got involved in coaching now.
So bad, Yari, I was going to say, elaborate on it. Like, what, fair enough to say it was so bad that it might have ended some guy's career and their hockey life?
It almost ended mine.
Wow.
But that was just a part of it. Like, a lot of coaches back then too, it was more of a bully mentality, where coaches would, you know, I have tons of stories about my first year junior and, you know, the coach I had is like Bill LaForge. He's no longer alive. So it's, I don't think it's fair to talk about somebody when they've passed on. All I can say is it was a horrible year in my life. It was horrible. Part of the reason too, like you carry some little demons with you and things that you're like, wow, why am I acting like this? And you're like, okay, right. It's because this happened to me back when I was 17, away from home for the first time. And, you know, it was a different time, man. And a lot of guys that played my era would tell you the same thing. I might've got a little worse than most people, mm-hmm. but I'll tell you one thing. After that, I went and played for a coach. This is fast forward, like 4 years later, I'm playing in the minors for Barry Melrose. And guys are like, guys are like, man, these practices are tough. This guy's so hard on me and I'm having a hard time. And I'm like, guys, this is nothing. Like, this is awesome. I'm like, right. Barry's a great guy. Yeah, he's hard on us, but he's only hard on us because he wants us to do well. The one thing that first year of my junior career did, it made me be able to handle anything. Anything that came my way, whether it's getting bypassed in the draft, playing in the minors, maybe that extra year or two, getting traded for a dollar when I'm 32 years old from Anaheim to Nashville, having to go down to the minors when I'm in Anaheim for 2 weeks when my career could be over, instead of sulking, going down and working hard and getting a second chance in Nashville. My dad passing away, maybe quitting hockey. Instead, I decided to go to Switzerland. And who makes it back to the NHL at age 36 with a bum knee? Just goes to show you, when you have bad things happen to you, it really makes you stronger. It makes you be able to handle anything. That's how I think about things. That's the way I am.
Jason, I didn't know that about you. I didn't know that about the terrible experience from first year junior. I almost end up crying when you're talking about that.
Stop it, Jimmy. You're getting all emotional.
It's for a 17-year-old. I'm really sorry you went through that, and I'm really happy that it doesn't happen anymore. And I don't take that lightly. I asked you, would it end guy's career, and you said, well, it almost ended mine. I can only imagine, because I know you can take a lot, right? I know you can. I know you, right? I know you well enough.
Well, Jimmy, I was lucky. I was lucky because I was surrounded by, I had a good infrastructure. My parents were down every weekend. Sister come down. Just when you have good, some people aren't fortunate enough to have good people around them, but when you have a good unit that supports you, and my parents came down every weekend because they knew I was on, they knew it was that close. And your parents are afraid to step in because they don't want you to get in trouble with the team. And it was just, one day maybe I'll write a book about it.
Right.
Until then, whatever. Share a few stories over a beer one time.
Right. Stevie talks about the greatest day as a hockey fan for him was the day the Ottawa Senators got granted a franchise. Gordy Wilson talks about too. He was there, and I forget, it was in Florida somewhere where they did it. Wind the tape ahead, Jason, to 2022. So much talk about the Senators. So much stuff has happened with the owner. Did he go out the way he wanted to go out? I don't know. This guy got hammered in the press for shit he said. He was different. He was out there. Now you're talking about this announcement the other day about LeBreton. Everyone is wondering what's going to happen with that team, with the two daughters. I'm saying not because they're girls or daughters. I'm like, what could they possibly know about running a hockey franchise? What do you think is going to happen with the Sens, Jason?
Well, number one, that announcement today just probably was 2 days ago when they announced, well, number one, that's a great thing. The NCC finally said, we are going to have a hockey team down there, which they've never said before. So that's a great thing for the city. So that's going to happen. When that happens, my guess is as good as anybody's, but that franchise value just went up another $100 million. I'll tell you that much.
Right.
That's going to be good. So whether the Melnick girls decide to go through with this, I know there's a board in place. There's people making decisions now for the daughters. It's all going to depend. One thing I do know, you can't be a millionaire and own a hockey team anymore. You got to be a billionaire. And I don't know the finances. I don't know. I'm like everybody else. I hear rumors that there's financial issues, this, that, and that. I do know you have to be extremely, extremely wealthy to run a hockey team. Nonetheless, do what's going to be planned down at LeBreton Flats.
Right.
So you got to have deep pockets to do that. So time will tell. I would think, just logically thinking here, that this team is eventually going to get sold to somebody with very deep pockets. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's just what I think. And when it does move to LeBreton, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be so good for the city. and it's going to be, I've seen the plans. I've seen what they're thinking of doing, and it's going to be fantastic.
What do you think the league, should they keep expanding, Jace? There's been lots of teams come along since you played. And someone was talking the other day that, the NHL is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, that they may go into Europe. Yeah. You know, that's not the first time I've heard that. What's your take over the next 10 years or 20 years with the NHL?
I heard that too. And I heard there's a lot of owners on board with that too, of maybe putting a team, well, maybe not Russia now, but in
the, right.
You know, you got Helsinki, you got Stockholm, maybe you throw a team in Germany. The problem is the spinoff of what it's going to do to their pro leagues. It's going to really affect how they, the German league and the Finnish elite. But I think it'd be cool. I think first, so there's going to be expansion in Quebec. Quebec's coming for sure. And they usually do things, probably going to be another team as well coming in. Look at Seattle. Like, Seattle's been a smash hit. Vegas has been great.
Right.
There's so many good hockey players, elite hockey players in the world now, that you're not really watering down the product that much, because you got so many kids now in the States playing. You got Europe. Like, there's so many good players. There's a lot of teams that want hockey. I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing. Europe would be awesome. I'd love to see it.
Right.
But I think we're still, we're a ways. I think we'll see expansion here first before we see the European teams come in.
Stevie, as soon as you say Quebec, Stevie goes right to, are the Montreal Expos going to come back? Okay. He doesn't care about hockey anymore. He wants his Expos.
I know. So do I. I love you.
Jason York, thanks a lot, man, for coming on. I got to ask you before you go, I think I know the answer to one of these when you talked about that first year junior. When you look back, Jason, would you do anything different? Do you want to do over?
I didn't understand we were coming on to deep thoughts here, man. I thought we were going to have some laughs, tell some stories.
Yeah, well, we can keep going, baby. Yeah, I can. I don't know how. You know, I can go deep, man. I've embarrassed myself lots. Yeah.
Regrets? I don't have a lot of regrets.
Or a bucket list. Have you done everything you want to do?
No, of course not. But as far as the hockey goes, all players will tell you this when they're done, at least most guys that I talk to. You just wish when you were younger, you maybe didn't put as much pressure on yourself, and you maybe just kind of, I would say you enjoy it more, especially when you're young, because I didn't really start enjoying it till I was on the back nine. When I got to Nashville,
yeah.
I was like, you just really appreciate playing in the league when you're in your 30s. When you're in your 20s, you're kind of in survival mode. You're right. You're always nervous all the time, afraid of somebody taking your job. Thinking, I'm a hockey player. I'm not really educated enough to do anything else besides hockey player. I'm going to be going to work in the mill. So you're thinking about that nonstop. And that's why you should go to school, kids. Go to school. Yeah. If you're going to be a hockey player, go to school too. But no, you're just nervous all the time when you're young. So for me, if I could go back, don't be so goddamn nervous. Just enjoy yourself a little bit more.
Right. Mark Messier, we got history, of course, in those Oilers days. And I remember I said, what's the best thing you ever learned, you know, when you played hockey? So the best advice I ever got is a guy taught me how to, in practice, okay, when they're making you do, you know, ovals here and you got to skate around. The guy taught me how to, if I'm cutting left, how to turn my head to the right.
Yeah.
So the coaches couldn't smell the booze from the night before when we were out, you know. He said, You really gotta know what you're doing when you're skating.
Hey, Jimmy, do you ever hear the Messier story from when he was captain in New York?
No.
So my buddy was playing there at the time, Andreas Johansson. He's got great Messier stories. He's right. Like they were all out the night before. Everyone's hungover. Messier's looking around, he sees the guys were hurting. And I think Colin might have been, was it Colin Campbell coaching? I forget who the coach was, but Messier skates around. He starts sniffing. He goes, "Hey, coach, you smell that? I smell gas. I think there's a leak." Coach blows the whistle. Tweet, tweet. That's it, guys.
Oh, no way.
Get off the ice. that's why the guys loved him, eh? Like he knows.
Oh, it was awesome.
He knows how to treat the boys. And, now, I heard so many good. I would have loved. I got a chance to play with Eisenman. I got a chance to play with Coffey, Solani, Korea. I would have loved to play with some of those. Like Koff was great, but I would have loved.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Jimmy, he was so good to me in Detroit. He'd always have this one line because I roomed with him in training camp. And anytime I would do something and he'd look at me, like we used to, you know how you put your gloves on the dryer between periods?
Sure, sure.
But the problem is when you do that, they get too hot. So when you put them on, your hands start sweating again. So I had a system. I'd go dryer, then I'd put them on top of the fan. And Koff's looking. He's like, "That's a kid, that's ingenious." He goes, "I'm going to put that. I'll put that in the book." When I write. It was always. It's so funny. I'll put that in the book.
You must have busted curfew. What was the secret? You must have got caught. Because you were a social guy,
time.
Man.
Yeah. One time. I got caught one time.
Okay.
I wasn't a guy that would go out the night before, though, because I was, like I said, I was always nervous, right? So when you're nervous, you don't want to get caught for curfew because then you're going to get kicked out of the league.
Right.
When I was in the minors, it was myself, Bobby Bugner, Jamie Pusher, and Chris Osgood. And yep. We're playing in Hamilton, and we're so stupid here because if you're going to miss curfew and curfew's midnight, don't come in at 12:15. You got to come in at 3.
Go deep. Yeah.
Because you're going to run into somebody in the lobby. So we're coming into the lobby, and we go, "Holy shit, there's Doug McLean," he's the assistant GM of Adirondack at the time, and the minor league team. So I dive behind a plant. Bugner runs away. And then all of a sudden, Jamie Pusher doesn't know where to go. He's looking left, and McLean's like, "I see you there, Pusher," and he's laughing because McLean was just out for a few beers,
right?
And so he comes, "Pusher, come here." He's like, "You can tell Bugner, York, and Osgood. I saw them too. And you fuckers better win tomorrow, or you're all getting sent to the East Coast League." So the next day, we get to the rink, and we're like, "Guys, McLean saw us all last night. We got to win this game. If we lose it, he's sending us to the East Coast League." So who knows? Like, Doug's a great guy. He's you see him. He's always laughing. He's
wonderful
funny.
Guy. Yeah.
He's always out for beers. But I don't know if he was serious, but we won the game, so it didn't matter. We held up our end of the bargain. So yeah, only time I ever got caught.
You never missed a
almost. So Mike Ilitch was so mad at the Red Wings because they lost in the first round. He sent the Redbird one down to us and Adirondack, and we got to use the private jet in our playoff run. It was awesome. We ended up playing. This is pretty cool. We ended up playing Toronto's farm team in the finals, and this was back when you had player coaches too. So Joel Quenneville was the assistant coach for St. John's, and also was also playing D. So he was like playing and coaching. It was Mark Crawford's first year. I had Melrose. Great. So much fun that series. But yeah, I almost missed the plane that year. I don't know what happened, but they ended up pulling the plane back to the gate to get me. I was so nervous.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, that close.
That was a close one, but I made it.
Yorkie, you're doing the broadcasting. I can't keep up with you because I see you sometimes. I don't see you other times. For a guy to survive in this revolving door of analysts and color guys and play-by-play guys, and I love McLean and Rudy and all these guys. Bieksa, right, is busting through, right? He's going to be awesome. But I don't like how many people there are. I watch a game. They've got you got your play-by-play guy, you got your color guy. Then they throw it to Ron, Botterill, Bieksa, Rudy, Elliot Friedman. They do that, and then they whip it to a couple other guys who are somewhere doing something. So you got 5, 6, 7, 8. You got 10 guys.
You're getting confused.
It's confusing. Yeah. What? But you're doing it. You're hanging in there. You got. You're doing Sportsnet stuff, and what else?
Yeah, I'm a survivor, Jimmy. That's my MO. I just survive. Just keep the head down, like Costanza too. Remember the Seinfeld episode where George is fired, but he just keeps coming back to work.
Yes. Steve? Stevie's a Seinfeld freak.
That was not Steinbrenner. That was another boss that he had.
No, that's when George would sneak back into the office. And then I think he ended up going to the party. Like, "Didn't we fire you a while ago?"
That's you. That you just keep showing up.
I just keep showing up, man. Keep showing up, mingle. Hey, yeah, he still works here. He still works here. It's all good. That's how you do it.
I'm surprised you have time for anything else with the outdoor rink effect. I was wondering, as an empty nester now, is that over? Is that all said and done?
It was a sad day, Warnsy. So I had that outdoor rink. We lived out in the country when my kids were ages 10 to 16. And what happened was they started going to the public outdoor rink because they wanted to be with their buddies. So I'm like, I'm putting all this rink work into this rink and I'm doing this and nobody skates on it anymore. So we ended up selling the house because I was angry the kids weren't using the rink anymore. Another Seinfeld out of spite. Spite's very powerful. Eh? Very powerful. But the rink's no more. I still appreciate a good outdoor rink, though. I love, I'm friends with a lot of the local rinksmen here, I'll call them, the guys that they build rinks and they do the local rinks. I love it. It's what I grew up on, guys.
The Jiffy bags, right? Weren't they called Jiffy bags from Canadian Tire? You filled them with water and then just peeled the plastic off. That's what I did.
Well, that's the one you had, and it was terrible. But Yorkies was a Taj Mahal of rinks, man. Like, we used to have these media, former pro hockey days. They were fantastic. A bunch of pizza and beer after. Miss those days.
Okay. Remember that? We had an epic game on my outdoor rink. It was, we had the jerseys out. We had the tunes going, beers in the snowbank. It was a Canadiana day to its finest. Yeah. I miss that rink, man. But time goes on.
Yeah. I miss that rink too. Cause I never got invited. Okay. What happened? I never heard this story. This would have been perfect.
Well, you lived in Edmonton. Were you going to fly in?
Yeah, that's true. I would have, you know that. What's Yorkie, when you're not working, you're a golfer still. What's your golf game like? Any good?
You know what? I started the season off. I'm like shooting low 80s, mid 80s. I'm like, this is going to be the year. I'm like, nice. Because you go out at the beginning of the year, you just swing. You're not thinking about it. I have consistently gotten worse my last 20 rounds. I'm back shooting in the 90s again. Like, it's brutal. I'm going out to play in about an hour. I got a big match.
Yeah.
There's going to be some cash on the line. So I got to figure it out. No more shooting in the 90s. So I'll send you a note later and tell you how I do.
If you do shoot in the 90s, down to the minors, East Coast League, you're gone. Hey, Yorkie, thanks a million for doing this, man. I'm coming to town in a few weeks. I'm going to look you up and we'll play a game of golf. What I'm really hoping is that people listening to the show are going to go, they're going to send in emails going, maybe Russ should step aside. Maybe Jason York should come in. You've been listening to The Suspendables, and that's Jason York. Yorkie, really good to catch up with you, man. Good luck with you know, you're empty nesters, so you got a bunch more time now on your hands, and I really appreciate you coming on, Jason. I'll see you in a few weeks, man, when I
I got one question for you, Jimmy, though.
Sure. Yeah, turn. Yeah.
Do you still have the Murphy bed?
I do. Yes, I do have the Murphy bed. We can make a show out of what we used to talk about on Tigor, the radio show. Jason, okay. Great guy, man. Really, really great to have you on and appreciate it. And thanks a lot, man, for doing this. And can we get you on again?
Oh, my God. Well, not if you're going to give me all the serious questions, man. It better be lighter.
I'm going deep, man. I got to I'm like Charlie Rose or whatever his name was. You know,
I'm bringing back all these awful memories for me, Jimmy. You've changed your shtick. Eh? It used to be all fun games. Now you're like a psychologist or something.
I used to do these shows and go right away with my list of who's plowable. Okay. And I can't, you know, did you want me to go there, Yorkie? You can't do it. Okay. You can't do it. Maybe we're going to have an X-rated show. Stevie, maybe we'll do it on SWT.
I gotta go tee off, boys.
You're on the tee. Go get him, Tiger. See you later, Jason.
Bye. See you, Yorkie.
See you, Steve.
There he's gone. Jason's gone just like that. He's off. He's off and running. What a great guy. What a great interview, eh, Stevie? I love that guy. I love that guy, and I miss him. And one of the good guys, eh?
Yeah, he's got a million stories. Quality guy. And he's certainly one of those guys. He described Daniel Lofgren in a way I would describe Jason York. Yorkie was always a guy that never really held that NHL label over your head. We worked together several years at what's now TSN 1200. You worked with them as well, but you never had that sense that you were working with, you know, a big NHL star or something like that. He always talked to everybody the way that he would, the way he'd treat family. So yep, great totally. Guy. And he has a million stories. We should have him back on again.
We will. He's giving me shit. I was trying to be nice to you. You know what? I'm not going to be gentle anymore, Steve. Okay. I do it once. Okay. I do it once. Give him the volleys, give him the, you know, give him the lob balls. Okay. Yep. He's like, no, I want the X-rated shit. You know? Okay, fine. I'm going to have a show on Yorkie, and I'm not going to have him on. I'm going to tell all these a bunch of stories.
Full on Chirp Fest next time around.
Next time we do it. You've been listening to The Suspendables. We'll talk to you next week from around the world. See you later, everybody.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortinel in L.A. A new episode every Tuesday morning on Wooshka, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.